This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Mira Siviso. It's our Health and Living segment. And today we're going to be discussing, you know, how we've all been working from home since the pandemic actually began. We've all been having our makeshift home offices where some of us are working from our dining tables, some of us from the couch, you know. But what does all of this mean for our musculoskeletal system? Working from home has resulted in a range of aches and pains. When are these problems related to a nerve entrapment and how do we treat it is what we're going to be discussing today. So if you have a call, the number to call is 7733 2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. And on the line with us to, you know, help us understand and answer some of your questions, Dr. Rajesh Singh, our consultant orthopedic surgeon. How are you today, Dr. Rajesh?
Very well, Mira. Nice to be able to join you on Zoom.
Absolutely. You know, I love your backdrop. You can't see Dr. Rajesh or his backdrop. It's very beautiful. You just want to explain that to us so that visually we know what's sitting behind you?
Okay. So what's sitting behind me is actually a photo of somebody taken from a side perspective. And it looks like the person sort of looking up and speaking at you as if you were standing up and somebody's seated at a desk, except that they haven't got their skin on.
Yes.
This is a view with the skin and the fascia taken off, so you can see the layers, the superficial most layer of the body before the skin is put on. And in this dissection, you can actually see where lots of nerves are coming out in the layer of the skin, and they're lying just on top of the muscle. So the sort of the perspective there is, it shows that just beneath the skin, you've got the layer of sort of muscles closest to the skin. And then you can actually see some of the bones, some of the fascia and connective tissue, as well as even in this sort of very layer close to the surface, you can already see a plexus or network of nerves. And that plexus or network of nerves and this sort of pattern of layer of fascia, muscle, nerve, next layer, fascia, muscle, nerve, repeats all throughout the body. And, you know, I have that as my backdrop because if you look at it and you have that appreciation, you understand that this beautiful system is repeated many times over. And every time you open a layer, it's a new layer with the same basic fundamental arrangement and pattern.
Okay. Do we know why that's the case, though?
Well, I think it's a pretty efficient system for the evolution of a machine. So if you look at the human body in terms of a machine or a mechanical kind of view, then you want to look at it in terms of, you want to try and understand how did this machine evolve? How did this machine come about? It's best to think of it in the smallest functional unit. And that's the way I look at the skeletal system. I look at it and go, well, what's the smallest functional unit that will actually allow me to do a certain job? And how is this unit scaled and repeated? So if you look at, I like machines, you know, I like mechanical things because they relate very much to the human body. So if you look at mechanical systems in cars, for example, right? So you've got motors turn things turn and push other things. So if you have a car that has like power windows, the mechanism that controls the angle and tilt of your power window is the same mechanism that controls the slidey forward and backward of your chair and the tilt forward and tilt back of your chair. It's the same mechanism that controls your air conditioning vent when you turn the knob to make the air go more towards your face or more towards your feet. So this basic functional unit idea is really quite powerful in terms of any system or engineering mechanism or methodology. And so in the musculoskeletal system, the basic functional unit is a nerve which supplies a muscle that crosses a joint, which creates a movement.
Okay.
That's the fundamental unit. Then from there, you scale it up as much as you like or you scale it down as much as you like.
Nerves. Do you just want to go through what the function of a nerve actually is. For me, it's very simple. I'll just say, you know, it's sort of like the wire that carries messages to the brain and back through the spinal cord. Is that very basic?
I don't think that's basic. I think that's an excellent distillation. So a nerve is like a wire that carries signals from the brain through the spinal cord to the part and then back. But you have to be able to look at it in a little bit more sophisticated manner to understand what are the nature of these signals and how do these signals work. So say, for example, if you have a condition with what I call the neuromuscular unit. So that means that when a nerve supplies a bunch of muscles, the muscle fibers control a tendon, the tendon makes a movement in a joint. That system has some inputs and some outputs, and both are important. So you have to understand both the inputs to the system and the outputs to the system. And nerves can be affected with both the input components as well as the output components, right? Mm-hmm. So I'll give you a very simple example. I had a busy day operating today, and one of the cases that I had was a young guy. He's probably in his mid to late 20s, and he's been spending a lot of time in his home gym now because of MCO, and he's working from home. And he goes through this routine of spending some time at his computer, comes off his computer, does some physical activity, you know, warms up, warms down, stretches, and, you know, sort of technically very sound method of doing things. But the problem that he had was he has this problem where he can't take his arm across his body. So for his left arm, he can't reach around to touch his right shoulder without pain at the back of his right arm. Mm-hmm. So the question sort of that he had to me was, but doc, I've been so careful and I've done everything correctly. Why do I have this problem? So I took a history, I examined him. And what I found is that when he was moving his arm across his body, the ball and socket joint within the shoulder wasn't rolling concentrically. The ball is actually sliding off to the margin of the socket, and that was the thing that was giving him the pain. So then we go through this sort of wiring diagram assessment, right? So which is, I go, well, I know that the textbooks say that these muscles are supplied by these nerves which travel along these pathways. So I examined him systematically going, these groups of muscles are relatively weaker compared to the rest of you. And that examination has to be quite sophisticated because that examination has to be tailored for that individual mm-hmm. in their particular strength circumstances. So, you know, this guy is young, he's fit, he works out. He's obviously stronger than me in almost all circumstances. So when I'm testing him for power, I'm not comparing his strength against mine. I'm comparing the strength of groups of muscles which I expect in him compared to strengths of other groups of muscles which I expect in him. So I know that certain muscles should be stronger than other muscles because that's the pattern that normally exists. And I also have the facility to be able to compare right and left.
Okay. But what has he done that's caused this issue? If he's doing everything right, I mean, he's 3/4 of us don't have a gym next to us to sort of move up and down from our table and, you know, to do stretching and stuff like
yes.
that. The most we can yes. do is just walk around.
Yeah.
But what is it that he's done that's caused that?
Okay, so basically what he had was he had an old injury. So
this is
an interesting thing about nerve entrapments. They can very often present very, very late. So he can recount, so he's about 25 now, so he can recount that when he was 15, he had a very heavy fall in a basketball injury. And he collided with another player. It was on the same shoulder. It hurt a lot at the time. But then it kind of went away and never really bothered him. So in the sort of 7 years after, what happened was at the time of the injury, he had some disturbance to the passage and pathway of the nerve. And because he wasn't working out in sort of a repetitive, regular routine, he had the sort of smorgasbord of daily activities. Nothing, he couldn't really pinpoint a particular problem. You know, go, yeah, my shoulder would be a bit sore from time to time. But because he didn't have such a stereotypy of movement, as in like the same movement repeated again and again and again, he wasn't able to pinpoint a particular issue with regards to his shoulder. But what's happened is because of MCO, he's doing this exact stereotypical movement every single time. And because he's doing that exact stereotypical movement every single time, the weakness was unmasked. And because the weakness is unmasked, he's able to point out to me that this is where it hurts.
Okay. So the you know, with nerve issues, you always think of numbness. The first thing that comes to your mind is you will feel some kind of numbness. Is that really the case?
Okay. No, actually, I think that's a very good point that you brought up. That's probably, you know, when you said in summary that the nerves are like a system of wires that carry signal to and from
the
brain via the spinal cord, I think the simplicity of that statement cannot be overemphasized, because sensation is only one signal that the brain carries, right?
Okay.
It's a relatively simple sensation that the brain carries. The more complex, or not the brain carries, it's a relatively simple thing that the brain has to process in terms of the nerve fibers that are assigned to do it. So if you want to take this sort of wire example again, you've got sort of expensive high quality wire, and then you've got like, you know, cheaper, less good quality wire. What did the designer of the human body do?
Some of us got expensive ones and some of us didn't get expensive ones. Is that what you're saying?
No. What I'm saying is that the more important sensations were assigned the better quality wire.
Right. Okay.
So pain is actually been assigned a relatively poor quality wire.
Right.
So if you study nerve in terms of the microstructure of nerve, if you think about the biological expense of providing the system, pain is actually modulated by a relatively crude system of nerves. Sensation is actually modulated by a relatively crude system of nerves. Movement and the control of movement actually has the most premium wires in the system.
Right.
So it's actually, I guess the surprising thing for me going through med school, going through my training, going through my orthopedic training and being in practice for a while, is how little emphasis has been put on this fact that the sort of the perception of the sensation of pain and the feeling of numbness have been given much more importance than the system design calls for. You know, weakness and dysfunctions of movement are actually much more sophisticated disorders and much more common and prevalent than numbness and pain.
I'm just trying to figure out what does that actually mean? I mean, what are you trying to tell us that
So what I'm trying to say is when somebody presents to me with a painful condition, my assessment isn't necessarily to work out where the pain is coming from, because that's usually pretty straightforward and obvious.
Yeah.
My assessment is to work out why is the pain there. And that's usually a lot more difficult and a lot less obvious.
Because of this poor quality wiring that you're talking about?
No, because of the dynamic musculoskeletal dysfunction. So what happens is when you talk about nerve entrapments, the common thing that you think about is stuff like, you know, carpal tunnel syndrome.
Yes.
You know, then you talk about a nerve entrapment. That's like number one, number two, and number three on people's list. Or, you know, I've got a pinched nerve, or, you know, a cervical spondylosis, or, you know, a slip disc, or I've got a pinched nerve in my back. I've got a pinched nerve in my neck. You know, my nerve is impinged in my wrist. Those are probably just the tip of the iceberg, right? The iceberg's actually in the dynamic musculoskeletal dysfunction brought about by the fact that the nerve doesn't quite work. So if you think about let's go back to an analogy with the example I gave at the start about control systems and your car, for example.
Yeah.
If you were to try to press the button that moves your car seat forward and backward, and you press the button and the motor's whirring and then your car seat moves, at some point when it comes to the end of the excursion of your car track, the seat will stop. You know, it won't sort of go off the rails.
Yeah.
That's because there's a sensor or feedback mechanism there that stops your seat from going off the rails. Now imagine if the sensor wasn't working. That means that as long as you press the button, the seat's going to keep moving, including falling off or out of your car, right? And that's basically what happens in the musculoskeletal system. You get this dynamic dysfunction where you actually get a situation where the stop mechanism doesn't work, for example.
Right.
But the reason why the stop mechanism doesn't work is because the nerve is impinged.
Because those messages are not being sent effectively.
Because those messages are not being sent correctly. So that's why when you think about nerve impingements in the skeletal system, you mustn't just think about pain and numbness. You must think about control. And when assessing a patient, you must look at, well, the patient presents with pain. That's true. Most orthopedic complaints are related to pain or dysfunction or occasionally numbness. But the question you really have to ask is, what is the dynamic dysfunction which allows this patient to have this problem?
Okay. All right. Fair enough. We'll come back and find out a little bit more. We'll go through scenarios, perhaps, as to how what's going on when we work from home and what sort of issues we're facing. And then we'll try and understand that a little better when it comes to nerve entrapments. I mean, we've spoken a lot at length about, before this whole pandemic and all of that, about how most of us are going to end up with lower back and neck pain, for an example. Does that mean with all of us sitting at home and working from home, is that going to mean that we're going to have bigger issues when it comes to nerve entrapment? So that's coming up next. If you have a question for Dr. Rajesh, call us. It's 7732900. WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. When we come back, I want to find out a little bit more about how we can actually prevent nerve entrapments, given the situation that we're in. How do we manage these nerve entrapments to ensure we're more comfortable working from home? That's coming up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back. It's Health and Living. I'm Meera Sivasodhi, Dr. Rajesh Singh, consultant, orthopedic surgeon. On the line with me, we're discussing nerve entrapments. Given that most of us are working from home, I think Dr. Rajesh has gone through quite a lot about helping us understand the nerves and how the sort of role it plays in the musculoskeletal system. It's interesting how, pain, you have explained to us how pain actually is related to poor quality wiring or poor quality wiring. Yeah, that's what you actually call it, Dr. Rajesh. And movement is controlled very much, but better quality wiring. And so you're saying we need to look at both in together, pain as well as the movement, which very often the focus is very much on the pain, is what you're actually trying to tell us. So, with all of us working from home, what are some of your observations based on patients coming to see you? I mean, do you see, the guy who works from home and then, goes to his home gym and, sort of works between his desk and the home gym is a great solution for most of us if we have the luxury of that. But what are some of the issues you're seeing or you have observed from patients?
Okay, let's just go through today's operating list. So I saw two women, actually, completely different ends of the spectrum. So one is a homemaker. And the other one is an executive who works at quite a high position within a multinational company. And they both presented with upper back pain and sort of discomfort in the hand. And the executive's problem was that she said, when I tried to stand at my desk and use my mouse standing, my hand goes numb. Mm-hmm. Right. So that was quite an interesting complaint, that the hand is numb when she's using the mouse standing up. And why she's standing up? Because, she's fed up of sitting at the dining table for, that 10 hours of the day that she's actually working from home. So she's trying to break her routine up. She's sitting for a while, she's working at a computer, then she's standing for a while, she's working at a computer. And with the homemaker, her complaint was that because she can't get the domestic cleaner who usually used to come in twice a week to do the cleaning, she now has to do everything herself. And as a result of that increased activity, she's got sort of unbearable. So whenever she does the mopping and the vacuuming, which is three times a week, she can't sleep that night because of upper neck and shoulder pain.
Okay.
Now, both these people present with, pain and numbness. And you would think that, pain and numbness is the issue. But let's take the homemaker. Her problem is coming from impingement of a tendon in the shoulder called the supraspinatus tendon. And what happens is there are two bone surfaces, and then there's a tendon that lives between the two bone surfaces. And because she has a high-level nerve entrapment, high-level meaning sort of close to the spine, she actually has impingement of the tendon between the bones when she does the mopping and the vacuuming. Then the impingement of the tendon within the bones causes inflammation, and the inflammation causes her not to be able to sleep at night. So she had 3 steroid injections into the shoulder before she saw me, and she said, but the problem keeps coming back. So the focus with her was the fact that she had the shoulder tendinitis. The root cause analysis was not done. The root cause analysis of, well, okay, let's look at your shoulder tendinitis. You know, do you have shoulder tendinitis? Yes, you do. How do we know based on your history, examination, MRI, ultrasound, whatever? The real question is, why do you have it? What's changed pre-MCO to post-MCO? And the thing that's changed is the fact that she's doing this vigorous housework. So what she had was she had a nerve entrapment at the root of the neck, which has obviously been there forever and ever. And that nerve entrapment is congenital for her. So that's caused by a structure called the cervical rib. So normally people have 12 ribs. Occasionally somebody has a 13th rib. And that 13th rib causes the space for the nerves to exit from the neck to the shoulder to be a little bit narrow. Mm-hmm. Now, you can be born with it. You can live with it your whole life. It cannot bother you until you do an unaccustomed activity. And then the weakness within the system is exposed. And so for this lady, her outcome of 3 steroid injections was just, you know, the side effects of having 3 steroid injections. And it didn't do any benefit for her. And the next step for her was going to be shoulder surgery. And she came to me and said, well, look, you know, I've had these repeated steroid injections and the problem keeps coming back. I'm wondering if I have my shoulder surgery, will the problem keep coming back? And the answer was, well, absolutely. If you have shoulder surgery, your problem will keep coming back because you haven't addressed the root cause, which is the weakness of a muscle tendon unit.
But what do you do if it's a congenital nerve entrapment? What do you do if that's the
very
case?
Very simply, you just send her to physiotherapy, strengthen certain groups of muscles, reposition her shoulder blade so that the nerves aren't entrapped so much, correct her work technique in terms of how she's doing the vacuuming and the mopping so that she isn't impinging that nerve while she works.
Do we walk around with a congenital nerve entrapment? How would we even know?
So the incidence of a cervical rib is in the order of like 8 to 12%, depending on whose literature you read. Okay? So, 8 to 12% is not a small number. So you may or may not have it, but the point is, if it doesn't bother you, it doesn't bother you. The question is, if it is a contributor to your problem, that's the key. So the key is trying to work out, is a nerve entrapment a contributor to your problem? And I think that would be the approach which I'm taking now. So when I see somebody with a musculoskeletal complaint, my filter or the system that I go through includes the usual look, feel, move, special tests, which is sort of the orthopedic mantra. But I also apply the filter of, is there a nerve issue going on here that's either compounding, propagating, or causing your problem? Because a lot of nerve stuff can just be fixed simply with physiotherapy. They don't need a procedure done. So the particular lady whom I did a procedure for today, she needed it because she'd had the problem for too long and there was scarring within the shoulder joint and that was compounding the problem further. So the congenital weakness compounded by housework, compounded by a late diagnosis and multiple steroid injections resulted in a complication.
With a congenital nerve entrapment, right? She had a pre-existing condition.
She had a pre-existing condition. So she had but the point is that the pre-existing condition didn't lead her down the garden path.
Right.
So usual care led her down the garden path, and I saw her as a result of a complication. So I did a procedure for her to reverse the complication. Once the complication was reversed, her pain went away. And then I sent her for physiotherapy to correct that malpositioning of the shoulder blade in relation to her chest wall so that she doesn't have the cervical rib, causing entrapment of the nerve.
What about the lady from the multinational company?
Okay, so the lady from the multinational company is a ex-state hockey player.
Hmm.
Oh, exactly.
Lots of injuries.
Exactly.
Past injuries.
Exactly.
It's a very reason why I never played hockey.
It was funny on so many levels, right? It was funny on so many levels because she's a state level hockey player, built like a hockey player, tough as nails, and said, "I can take pain." Right. So, but my mouse finger doesn't work. So that means that even while she's standing up, even while she's working at her desk, even with the pain, she can still stand it because she goes, you know, what's it compared to hockey pain, right?
Yeah.
I go, okay, you know, fair. I can't say I've thought about it that way, but you can certainly think about it that way. But her complaint was that because she works a lot with Excel spreadsheets. And she has to sort of flick her finger between the sort of scroll wheel of the mouse and the left click button.
Right.
And she loses that function. So she can't accurately click the mouse while she's standing up and working.
She's all right to do it when she's sitting down.
Yes, but she's all right to do it when she's sitting down.
Oh, that's bizarre.
No, it isn't. Because you've got, again, same thing. You've got the leash of nerves that go from point A to point B. When you're standing up, the leash of nerves is being pulled. Because there's tension on the upper limb, because gravity is pulling your upper limb down.
Yeah.
When you're sitting down and your elbow or forearm are rested on the table, then you don't have that traction.
Yeah.
Right? So, I mean, there's a wonderful condition called scapular thoracic dissociation. So, the shoulder blade is connected to, well, the arm is connected to the trunk via the shoulder blade and the collarbone. So, in people who have a very severe high energy or high trauma injury, the collarbone breaks and the muscles that support the shoulder blade to the trunk tear. Then the only thing that's connecting your trunk to your arm is nerves and blood vessels.
Which I'm sure by playing hockey would have had a huge impact.
Yeah, so for her, basically... For her, the idea was that she clearly had an injury from her state sporting mm-hmm. days. And the injury has clearly been there for basically a very long time. It, you know, whatever pain it causes, whatever dynamic skeletal dysfunction it causes, she's been able to cope with it. The point at which she decompensated is the fact that the nerve compression has gotten severe enough now that when she stands up, you know, her mouse finger doesn't work. And so that was what she was concerned about when she came to see me.
So what did you do?
Well, very simple. I just found where the nerve was entrapped. So she had a couple of nerve entrapment levels in the forearm and the elbow. And the reason for that was just, you know, the whacks and hits that she took when she was playing hockey. You know, she sort of looked at me as if, like, you idiot, when I asked her injury. And, you know, she said, state-level hockey player. And I thought, yeah, have you had any injury? She goes, yeah, must be.
You're lucky she didn't say, what a silly question, doctor. Yeah. I mean, come on.
I said it. She didn't have to verbalize. Am I the right guy here? You know, this is guy really know what he's doing.
Exactly, right? Yeah, that's because did you tell her you do Tai Chi? That is why, you know.
You know, so it was interesting because she actually had a neck x-ray. And, you know, the neck x-ray showed some mild age-related degeneration. You know, she came off with a diagnosis of cervical spondylosis on the piece of paper, right? And she said, oh, my God, it's coming from my neck. I'm going to need this big neck operation with a risk of paralysis and death and all that. And so she basically had the fear of God put into her because somebody had said, you know, abnormal neck x-ray and hand numbness equals operation on your neck.
So how did you diagnose the nerve entrapment?
By physical examination, right? And this is something that is one of my pet peeves. The fact that a proper physical examination gives so much information and yet it is not done. Okay? So the proper physical examination means that the body has a wiring system, a wiring diagram, just as you would for any piece of electronics, circuitry. I mean, your house has a wiring diagram, your office has a wiring diagram. So that means that electricity from TNB comes to the junction box, then from your junction box, there are fuses, and then from fuses, there are wires, and then the wires travel all over the house. So if you have the wiring diagram, you can say, well, the aircon in the upstairs master bedroom doesn't work, the heater in the children's room doesn't work, and the car porch light isn't working all at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at it and it's on the same circuit. So what can you conclude? The wire, the master wire that supplies that three circuits must be spoiled. But, you know, you have to have that sophisticated enough understanding to go that, you know, an aircon, a water heater, and a light can come from the same wire. And that's the issue with the skeletal system. The fact that you really have to understand what the wiring is and at what branch points the wiring can get entrapped, both in terms of sensation as well as in terms of power.
So are you saying then imaging doesn't help detect these problems?
Okay, so let me be careful with what I say here.
Yes.
Imaging is useful to exclude certain causes, but the foundation is still based on the physical examination because there is no imaging nor investigative modality as sophisticated as a complete physical examination.
Okay. I see, you know, you were so careful that you read it off a script. This is the first time, Dr. Rajesh. Have you read anything off a script during a show? I'm just amazed.
No, because one of the shows that I did in the studio, I had the person on the outside wildly waving and crossing their arms when I was on my pet peeve topic. So I just
images are merely shadows. Am I quoting you correct? They're merely shadows.
That's exactly right.
Physical.
Images are merely shadows, and you have to put those shadows correctly.
Okay. Right? We'll come back after the market update and continue this discussion. If you think you have a trapped nerve, think carpal tunnel syndrome, as you said, you know, a pinched nerve, that kind of thing. You can get it, you know, everywhere, shoulders, back, some are more common than the others. So, you know, give us a call. It's 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. Well, if you just joined us, Dr. Rajesh Singh, consultant orthopedic surgeon, on the line with me for his monthly show. We're discussing whether or not you have a trapped nerve. With all of us working from home, just switching from our dining table to the couch to sometimes, you know, sitting propped up in your bed. We seem to be working in every corner of the house. As long as there's Wi-Fi, we seem to be working in those corners of the house. It's causing us a lot of pain, whether or not it's neck pain, back pain, leg pain, shoulder pain. You know, I know it's all creeping up on us. Do you think it's all temporary, Dr. Rajesh? Or do you think this is going to stay with us for a while?
Look, I think that the idea of having skeletal dysfunction due to poor or paucity of movement is something that's very real. And you know, my penchant for motion is the lotion.
Yes.
I think that certainly once we're able to go back to sort of more full and functional movement, a lot of the aches and pains will just go away. Because you know the sort of the stiffnesses within structures go away, your ability to stretch and glide comes back, your ability to move things through the full range comes back. This MCO hasn't been as bad as the last one because you know you can actually legally go out for a walk.
Yeah,
you can actually walk around your taman, go to the park, you know, within daylight hours, go for a walk, go for a stretch. Obviously, maintain your social distance, but you know that ability to sort of have some space to move around in, I think it's really, at least for me personally, been the most significant difference between the last MCO and this MCO. You know, the fact that I can actually go out for my morning walk, stretch my limbs, just do some basic stretches in the local taman.
Okay.
That's made a lot of difference to certainly my personal skeletal health, and I'm sure that it has for lots of people as well.
It works. It honestly works. Just go for a walk around the house. I think it really helps. Zaidi is asking, and you know, he's talking about glaucoma and tinnitus issues. He says are partly due to nerve problems, but let's just talk about nerve problems in general. Can the situation be reversed?
Yeah, I think so. Look, the nerves are generally quite forgiving if they haven't been broken or lacerated. So if you have a nerve compression, it's generally quite amenable to physiotherapy, provided that the diagnosis is made correctly, particularly if the presenting symptom isn't, what's the word I'm looking for, directly causal. So I'll give you an example. I saw this lovely Japanese lady who had elbow pain. And, you know, the first two questions I asked her were, do you play tennis and do you play golf? And she said, no. Then I said, are you sure you're Japanese and living in Malaysia? So we had a bit of a laugh about that.
Did she come back?
Yeah, she did. Yeah, she did. So the poor lady had been diagnosed as tennis elbow and treated for a year and a half as tennis elbow, which didn't get better before I saw her. Now, the odd thing is I got her diagnosis wrong the first time. Right, because I said to her quite confidently, yeah, you know, this pain is coming from the entrapment of a nerve at this point. So if I treat and release the nerve at this point, your pain should go away. I treated the nerve at that point and the pain didn't go away. At which point I went, oh, what did I miss? And what I missed was the fact that the nerve entrapment had caused weakness. Weakness has caused instability. Instability had caused inflammation. So while I picked up the weakness and I picked up the instability, I missed the inflammation, because the inflammation was tucked away and hidden in a corner. Mm. And the thing that alerted me to the inflammation was the fact that she said, I can pick up a soup bowl, I can put it to my mouth, but in that process of putting it down on the table, just before it touches the table, my elbow is consistently painful. So I went, okay, there must be a little corner of inflammation hidden somewhere in your elbow joint. So I looked for it very carefully with the ultrasound. I found it. I gave a steroid injection into that little piece of inflammation and the symptoms went away. And then she completed a physiotherapy in relation to stabilizing the joint so that it doesn't get inflamed. But you see, in that situation, the primary problem wasn't the pain. The primary problem wasn't the inflammation. The primary problem was the instability. The instability in turn was caused by the nerve entrapment.
So to your question of whether it can be reversed or not.
Yeah, so the question of whether it can be reversed or not depends on the degree to which the dysfunction is there. So with this lady, she'd had 18 months of dysfunction and quite significant weakness on testing. So again, quite a strong lady. So quite strong in that, you know, she spends time in the gym, she spends time working out. It's just that her poor form and technique is what caused her nerve entrapment in the first place.
Okay.
So she had quite significant weakness. But again, unless you sort of specifically set the bar for this particular individual, I expect them to be this or that strong, or I expect this muscle group to be that much stronger than that muscle group, then it's something that's likely to be missed, because you're just taking them on an all-comers kind of scale and not, you know, people talk a lot about this thing, about this concept of individualized medicine, right? Yeah. And, you know, some private universities in the US are making personalized medicine a marketing initiative, but medicine's always been personalized. You know, medicine's personal to you. Your particular unique set of problems and circumstances are not the same as everybody else's unique set of problems and circumstances. I think part of the problem has been in the teaching and dissemination of knowledge, because I teach at a university, is that we've distilled many individuals' experiences into a standardized formula, which we then teach. But we don't teach the kids to unpack that knowledge to generalize, you know. So I think that's one of the things that I certainly try and do at the university. I try and get the kids to think about, well, what else could it be, or what else could be causing this? It's not enough just to recognize it. You know, we stand on the shoulders of giants. People before us have already put the time and effort and brain power into recognizing problems. They've then distilled those problems and presented them to us in an easily digestible and diagnosable format. Just aping it again is of no use. Learning how to apply it in an individual's unique circumstances is what medicine is about.
Do you think that's where we're sort of losing our way?
Yes, I think so. Very, very much so. I think really that's where we're losing our way, when the demand for diagnostic proof of a nerve entrapment comes from a third party or a payer, I just go, oh no, here we go again. Because there's no understanding that a sophisticated physical examination is of much more value than the MRI or the CT scan or the X-ray or the whatever else.
When does medication come into play when it comes to a nerve entrapment? Does it even help?
Yeah, I think so. I think the role of medication is the usual stuff we give, which is basically muscle relaxants to stop spasm of muscles around nerves which are entrapped, anti-inflammatories to stop the inflammatory process, which then irritates the joint, which then can cause further irritation of the nerve. But in terms of medication for cure, no. But medication to control the consequences and to prevent the situation from being compounded, absolutely.
Okay, so when it comes to occupational-related sort of issues, like, you know, working from home and things like that, how much would a massage help when it comes to nerve entrapments?
A lot.
How much? Really? Oh, really?
A lot.
What about acupuncture?
Acupuncture controls pain very well, but I don't think it helps alleviate the symptoms, because at the start, I said that you've got one layer upon another layer upon another layer upon another layer. And so, I mean, like physically and literally. So what you've got then for a massage, for a skilled massage therapist, is they can actually pick up with their fingers, well, you know, this path doesn't feel right. You know, this, and different cultures will call it different things. You know, different cultures will call it qi, some will call it, you know, angin, some will, you know, call the skill ilmu, whatever it is. But the skilled therapist who's had years of experience will go, this structure doesn't feel right. Right. So this structure compared to another structure, compared to all the other structures, I felt doesn't feel right. And the least they do is they massage it to relieve the tension and spasm within the structure. And they help to stretch it, which relieves the sort of entrapment within the structure. So in terms of for symptomatic relief, yep, absolutely. Massages are wonderful, provided they're done by somebody who's experienced and knows what they're doing. The hard massages are bad. So the find the knot and dig your ankles or knuckles into it until the person cries, that's bad. Because all that does is it just compounds the problem even further.
What so, about, you know, when it comes to cold compression, hot compression, does that relieve?
Yeah, definitely. So if you have inflammation, cold compression is always useful. If you have a focal knot, for example, like, you know, if you're working from home and, you know, you feel your back and you say, oh, this is painful lump or knot there, then the hot compress is the right thing to do. It may make it feel worse for the short term, but for the long term, it actually helps because it relieves the muscle tension.
Okay. And when the condition is occupational related, it can be difficult to change routines and habits. How do you help your patients through that?
We give them exercises to strengthen different muscle groups to change posture. So we take a do approach and not a don't approach. So if I tell somebody don't do this, it's very difficult for them to adapt. If I tell somebody, do this, it's easier for them to adapt.
Mm-hmm.
So we do change how people do things, but we do it in a positive reinforcement manner. So we give them certain exercises to strengthen certain muscle groups, for example, so that the shoulder has to adopt the posture because the muscle group is stronger.
Okay, so I think the takeaway is nerve entrapment is one thing, but there are a whole lot of other things that help support it. And so you can't just look at the nerve entrapment in isolation is what you're saying.
Correct. So what I'm saying is that you have to look at the system that the nerve supplies, and then you have to look at the dysfunction of the system and understand that you need to correct the dysfunction of the system, not just look at which nerve is entrapped or where it's entrapped.
Okay. And is there, if you do everything right, can you actually properly manage a nerve entrap, an entrapped nerve? Can you actually manage it well?
Yes, easily. Easily. That's a wonderful thing about the musculoskeletal system. You know, you can't tell your liver how to digest things, or, you know, what toxins to break down or what order to break them down in. You can't tell your stomach what order in which to absorb which foods and which foods to absorb and which foods not to absorb.
Well, I wish we could.
Yeah, but you can't. But with the skeletal system, you can. You can actually train the skeletal system. So if you realize what component is working, what component is dysfunctional, you can actually train other components to take over the component of that particular thing that's weak or dysfunctional. And that's infinite adaptability of the skeletal system is one of the things that makes it so fascinating.
Can you revive damaged nerves?
No, that's a short answer. So it depends what degree of damage. There's a guy called Seddon and Sunderland. So they made a classification of nerve damage. So there's 1, 2, 3, 4. So 4 means that you've cut the nerve into half and then you stitch the nerve back. That can never, ever, ever give you back as good quality nerve as you had. Close to, but you just physiologically impossible. Up to grade 3, yeah. So you can, if you talk about non-accident, non-laceration, non-massive trauma, almost everything's fully reversible, except muscle fibrosis. So that means that while you can reverse the damage to the nerve, the muscle or the muscle tendon unit that's supplied by the nerve may be irreversibly damaged.
Okay.
But if it's irreversibly damaged, no problem. Just find another one that can subserve its function and train that up.
And that can be done as well.
Easily.
Okay, because it's layer after layer after layer.
Exactly.
And you have backup. You have backup.
You do, you do. It's just being able to recruit and retain. So the challenge is this thing called recruitment. So when somebody comes in and they say, look, you know, I've got this problem, and I test them and they say, and I tell them you're weak in this particular muscle group, they'll say, yeah, but, you know, I can bench, you know, 180 at the gym, you know, I can leg press 200 pounds. Why are you telling me I'm weak? Then I always say you can make the movement, but the quality of your movement is poor. So the muscle groups that you're using to create the movement aren't engineered to sustain that movement. And then they get the idea that movement has both a quantity and a quality. And when you take a weight measurement against how much you can lift, how much you can press, how much you can run, all you're looking at is you're looking at the quantity and not the quality.
And is that what Pilates actually does? It sort of isolates and helps you on that
exactly
level.
Exactly right. And that's what Pilates does. But that's Pilates using the wood frames and the proper reformers. And that was the philosophy of Pilates. The philosophy of Pilates was basically for you to be able to recognize that there are bits, and the bits have certain qualities in terms of the tissue strength and tension. And that's why they use a lot of wood frames and they use a lot of elastic stuff, because wood has sort of a flexible quality that steel doesn't have. And so the Pilates, the proper Pilates equipment is made out of wood that has a degree of bend and flexibility, mimicking what the skeletal system would have.
Okay. Would you have a message for us on nerve entrapment?
Oh, motion is the lotion.
Come on, you got to get more creative. It's 2021. You've been with us, what, 7 years?
The fundamentals never change, Mira.
Oh, that's true. Thank you very much for joining us. Always
You're
a pleasure
welcome.
Speaking to you. Dr. Rajesh Singh, consultant orthopedic surgeon, speaking to us about nerve entrapments on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.